The North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Agent promised to fly from Mercy to the other side of Lake Superior at 3 o'clock. 2 days before the event was to take place, he tacked a note on the door of his little yellow house saying, "At 3 o'clock p.m., on Wednesday, the 18th of February, 1931, I will take off from Mercy and fly away on my own wings. Please forgive me. I loved you all." Signed, Robert Smith, insurance agent. Mr. Smith didn't draw as big a crowd as Lindbergh had 4 years earlier. Not more than 40 or 50 people showed up, because it was already 11 o'clock in the morning on the very Wednesday he had chosen for his flight, before anybody read the note. At that time of day, during the middle of the week, word-of-mouth news just lumbered along. Children were in school, men at work, and most of the women were fastening their corsets and getting ready to go see what tails or entrails the butcher might be giving away. Only the unemployed, the self-employed, and the very young were available, deliberately available because they'd heard about it, or accidentally available because they happened to be walking at that exact moment in the shore end of Not Doctor Street, a name the post office did not recognize. Town maps registered the street as Maine's Avenue, but the only colored doctor in the city had lived and died on that street, and when he moved there in 1896, his patients took to calling the street, which none of them lived in or near, Doctor Street. In 1918, when colored men were being drafted, a few gave their address at the recruitment office as Doctor Street. In that way, the name acquired a quasi-official status, but not for long. Some of the city legislators, whose concern for appropriate names and the maintenance of the city's landmarks was the principal part of their political life, saw to it that Doctor Street was never used in any official capacity. And since they knew that only Southside residents kept it up, they had notices posted in the stores, barbershops, and restaurants in that part of the city, saying that the avenue had always been and would always be known as Maine's Avenue and not Doctor Street. It was a genuinely clarifying public notice because it gave Southside residents a way to keep their memories alive and please the city legislators as well. They called it not Doctor Street, and were inclined to call the charity hospital at its northern end No Mercy Hospital, since it was 1931, on the day following Mr. Smith's leap from its cupola, before the first colored expectant mother was allowed to give birth inside its wards and not on its steps. The reason for the hospital's generosity to that particular woman was not the fact that she was the only child of this Negro doctor, for during his entire professional life, he'd never been granted hospital privileges, and only two of his patients were ever admitted to Mercy, both white. Besides, the doctor had been dead a long time by 1931. It must have been Mr. Smith's leap from the roof over their heads that made them admit her. In any case, whether or not the little insurance agent's conviction that he could fly contributed to the place of her delivery, it certainly contributed to its time. When the dead doctor's daughter saw Mr. Smith emerge as promptly as he had promised from behind the cupola, his wide blue silk wings curved forward around his chest, she dropped her covered peck basket, spilling red velvet rose petals. The wind blew them about, up, down, and into small mounds of snow. Her half-grown daughter scrambled about trying to catch them while their mother moaned and held the underside of her stomach. The rose petal scramble got a lot of attention, but the pregnant lady's moans did not. Everyone knew the girls had spent hour after hour tracing, cutting, and stitching the costly velvet, and that Gerhardt's department store would be quick to reject any that were soiled. It was nice and gay there for a while. The men joined in trying to collect the scraps before the snow soaked through them, snatching them from a gust of wind or plucking them delicately from the snow. And the very young children couldn't make up their minds whether to watch the man circled in blue on the roof or the bits of red flashing around on the ground. The dilemma was solved when a woman suddenly burst into song. The singer, standing at the back of the crowd, was as poorly dressed as the doctor's daughter was well-dressed. The latter had on a neat gray coat with a traditional pregnant woman bow at her navel, a black cloak, and a pair of four-button ladies' galoshes. The singing woman wore a knitted navy cap pulled far down over her forehead. She had wrapped herself up in an old quilt instead of a winter coat. Her head cocked to one side, her eyes fixed on Mr. Robert Smith, she sang in a powerful contralto, "Oh, sugar man, done fly away. Sugar man done gone. Sugar man cut across the sky. Sugar man gone home." A few of the half a hundred or so people gathered there nudged each other and sniggered. Others listened as though it were the helpful and defining piano music in a silent movie. They stood this way for some time, none of them crying out to Mr. Smith, all of them preoccupied with one or the other of the minor events about them, until the hospital people came. The crowd was beginning to be a little nervous now that the law was being called in. They each knew Mr. Smith. He came to their houses twice a month to collect $1.68 and write down on a little yellow card both the date and their 84 cents a week payment. They were always half a month or so behind and talked endlessly to him about paying ahead after they had a preliminary discussion about what was he doing back so soon anyway. They kidded him, abused him, told their children to tell him they were out or sick or gone to Pittsburgh. But they held on to those little yellow cards as though they meant something, laid them gently in the shoebox along with the rent receipts, marriage licenses, and expired factory identification badges. Mr. Smith smiled through it all, managing to keep his eyes focused almost the whole time on his customers' feet. They thought he was probably a nice man, but he was heavily associated with illness and death. Jumping from the roof of Mercy was the most interesting thing he had done. "Just goes to show," they murmured to each other, "you never really do know about people." Downtown, the firemen pulled on their greatcoats. But when they arrived at Mercy, Mr. Smith had seen the rose petals, heard the music, and leaped on into the air.